The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
Tick, tick, tick. The clock hand moves closer and closer to nightfall. But being able to act is also depending on being able to be there. What do you do if something else pulls you away? Well, detective, answer me. What do you do? For the preparations are done, but is the evil done with you? One thing I know is that I am done with having to warn you weekly that this podcast may contain images of graphic violence, child endangerment, and foul language. But what can we do? As we once again head into this Tentacle Tuesday and our story, as we near critical mass, for the darkness isn't satisfied, and nor am I. So grab your popcorn, your tentacles, and snuggle in as we head into Chapter 16 and a costly delay. Karen fell forward and onto her knees, clutching her stomach. She looked up at the crow and the little girl. She no longer seemed human, more like a walking blight. Her pale skin had darkened into more of a shadow, void of any color whatsoever. Her face was now a twisted void with a Cheshire Cat grin. The crow flapped violently as if trying to distract her from. The girl raised her hand, and with a twisting motion, once again Karen felt intense pain.
Oh,
she moaned, looking down at the red-stained ground. She began to panic.
No, Jack!
She had to get inside, to get away from this fiend. Turning back towards the steps, she began to crawl, but the pain was so intense.
Too slow,
the evil little girl sneered.
Please, you're killing us,
Karen pleaded, to which Nicole replied,
I know.
Why?
Karen asked, hoping, begging for some relief. For a brief moment, the pain and pressure stopped. The girl stood there as if staring. It was as if she had forgot herself. Karen asked again.
Why?
She could see the confusion and pain in her face. That allowed Karen enough time to retreat up the back step. She grabbed the rail and began to pull herself up.
Like I need a reason.
A bitter voice answered, and she felt something grab her leg and begin to pull her back down and away from the door. At that, Maggie had the sudden realization. Nicole had come here to induce labor. She wanted to kill the baby and its mother. Worse, she had Maggie right where she wanted her. To save the woman, she would have to take human form. Or, if she remained a crow, she'd be forced to watch as Karen, too far from a phone, would bleed to death before she could give birth. As a human, Maggie would be vulnerable to Nicole's attacks.
What a wonderful way to end the day, Nicole spat, as she watched Karen try to push her way back up the step.
Oh God, please. I need to get back inside. The baby. I need to call Warren. Please.
Karen begged.
What's wrong, sister? Nicole chided. Are you going to let the woman freeze in the snow? Let the baby die with her?
Damn it!
Maggie cursed. She began to fly back as fast as she could to Karen.
Good, good. Just a little more, Mags. Just...
Then Karen let out another loud cry.
Warren, please!
At that, a bright light exploded from behind them, knocking Maggie down and out of the sky. The pressure it gave off forced Nicole back.
What is this?
She growled at the light, as a warm, comforting presence surrounded Karen, helping her to regain her composure and strength to get her back up and inside the house. Nicole yelled,
No! Not yet, you don't! I'm not done!
But as she called out, she could see a cloaked figure standing in the light, one she had never seen before. His eyes were ablaze with fury as he looked down and out at her. Nicole backed away. At that, Maggie seized the opportunity to drive Nicole back fully. She'd only get one shot in her bird form. Her eyes began to glow in amorous, to which Nicole responded,
So,
You still have power. Have at it if you will. The claw Maggie let out sent out a ball of light towards Nicole, a ball Nicole caught in her hands with a smile.
So feeble, she began to say.
But the energy ball seemed to increase in size and strength as Nicole held it there, trying to return it back to her sister. But it was clear she was having trouble just keeping it in place.
You witch!
She exclaimed as she barely managed to escape the explosion. Nicole would need to retreat. But it wasn't a complete loss. There was a good chance the mother and child would still die. The ground beneath her shifted and became a black void that Nicole began to sink into, as if it was a puddle. Maggie turned back to see where the woman had gone. The light still poured out of the house and into the surrounding landscape.
Who is this?
She attempted to get closer when she spied another individual, one with a more familiar face.
Sam?
Sam put her fingers to her lips. Maggie was not to know. Not to know who was in the house, nor to approach any closer.
Fine, she thought. Have your little mystery.
She let out a call and once again soared away into the sky. She had managed to avoid discovery and learn something perhaps she would have been better not knowing. Nicole had somehow survived. This would mean trouble for her down the road. She'd fly back now to the director. This was something she had to let him know. Warren stirred fitfully. He couldn't doze off. Jonah wasn't sleeping either. You don't trust me? Jonah asked, seeing he was awake.
No, Warren replied.
Well, at least you're honest, Jonah responded.
I'm still struggling with a huge gap in my memories, Warren reminded the mystic.
Yes, and I'm afraid except for the ones up to your grandfather's death, you will probably never recover the rest.
Warren grabbed him by his robes.
Why?
I can't tell you, Jonah stated.
Why? What sort of power or mystery is keeping me like this? Warren asked, frustrated.
You wouldn't believe you if you told me, Warren finished. And that's why I don't trust you, Jonah.
I'll live, Jonah replied. Taking a deep breath, Warren sat back down.
Do you really think we can defeat this demon, this Cassandra person?
No, but I need to try. If I had your grandfather's sword, maybe.
Didn't you leave that at the cottage when Uriel brought you here?
Huh, I see you remember that now. Good.
Yes, we brought it there, and it's to remain there for another day, Jonah stated.
And how will we reach that other day if we don't stop them now?
Jonah was about to say, I'll figure it out, when Warren's phone began to vibrate. Pulling it out of his pocket, he didn't recognize the number and hung up. It began to ring again immediately.
What the?
He grumbled. He hung up again. He didn't have time for spam calls. Immediately, it started ringing again.
What? Who is this? I don't have time to...
Go home, detective.
A voice came over the open line.
Huh?
Are you deaf, detective?
The voice asked.
You are desperately needed at home.
He heard a click and looked over at Jonah. Jonah could see the look of distress on his face. Who was it? He asked Warren.
I have no idea, Warren replied.
He stood up and began to head towards his coat.
Where are you going? Jonah now concerned. Tonight will be difficult as it is. It's critical we do this before the new moon.
Home. I need to get home.
Why?
What's wrong? Jonah insisted.
I don't know. The voice said, go home.
And you're just going to listen.
Warren shot him a look.
Yes. But if you leave, we won't have enough people to lock the demon inside that barrier.
I know, Jonah, he replied. I know, and I'm sorry. But there was a desperation in that voice. I have to go.
The other three men stirred and looked over at Warren.
What's wrong? The chief asked.
Ask him, Warren replied. I don't have time to explain it again.
At that, Warren raced out of the station house and down the steps.
Shit!
Jonah said. This had to be the work of Cassandra. That crafty witch had now everything the way she wanted.
What do we do now? The doctor asked.
Pray for a miracle, doctor, he replied. Because as your detective noted earlier, I am not the word. And for this,
I would definitely need to be. Trepidation filled the room.
Well, the chief said, I'm not going to get any more rest. We might as well get underway. The mayor and the doctor nodded.
Are you men sure? Jonna asked.
Yes, Mr. Hollander, the doctor replied. As you said earlier, if he needs to act, someone will act. However, if we don't show, there isn't a chance for any of us at all.
Jonna was impressed by their bravery.
He repacked the apostle the chief had given him and donned his cloak.
I feel like we should be wearing something, you know, like the mark of the word or the cross or something.
The mayor half-kidded.
No, Mr. Mayor, Jonna replied. You don't need a trinket. It's already emblazoned on your hearts.
They headed out the hall and past Riggs, who was in the process of being relieved by Hicks. Where's the party?
Riggs inquired. No party, Riggs, the chief responded. Do me a favor. Stay here and back up Hicks for a bit. Hold my calls and tell no one where I'm going.
Chief?
Hicks looked at the men with deep concern.
Where are you going?
Hell, Hicks. The very gates of hell. She was confused by the statement.
Oh, Chief, Riggs began.
Yes, Riggs.
I finally cleared up that last message from Moran. You may want to hear it before you go.
Jonah nodded, and they followed Riggs into the radio room. Riggs shut the door.
Now, I gotta admit, this is a little freaky, but...
Tell Jonah. I'll be waiting.
That sounds like Moran, the chief said.
That's what I thought too, but according to the time code that came in, Moran would have already been dead.
Jonah closed his eyes, trying to ascertain what Moran meant. He didn't get a chance to think on that too long when the chief's cell began to vibrate.
It's Stevens, he exclaimed. Warren, what's up? What happened?
I'm on the way to the hospital,
Warren replied.
I found Karen passed out on the bed. She lost a lot of blood, and it looks like there's been some sort of fight outside my house.
Do you need backup?
No, I've got this,
he replied.
Tell Jonah, I'm sorry.
But Jonah was already waving him off.
Don't worry, detective. Your wife comes first, he replied. Warren hung up, and Jonah, Chief Reynolds, Dr. Giles, and Mayor Simmons made their way out of the station. Riggs watched him go in bewilderment. Normally, he'd be on top of every little thing that happened here, but this time, he was completely left in the dark. His only instructions were not to let anyone near the Winter residence or to follow them. He turned to Hicks.
I feel like I'm watching a funeral march.
I hope not, she replied. I don't know what we'd do without them.
When they arrived, it was clear they were expected. The house radiated a creepy red glow, which gave the remaining snow the look of a sea of blood. The house itself was now black, as if every ounce of the void had collected into one place. Jonah handed them each an apostle. He gave Luke to the mayor, Mark to the doctor, Matthew to the chief, and he held on to John.
What do we do now? Mayor Simmons asked.
We fan out around the house. I had already thrown Simon over there, and I have Philip.
They left the car and made their way up the walk. The ground was now thick with a thorny brush. As they neared the spot where he had thrown Simon, Jonah froze. Somehow Warren had been right. The marker had been removed. He looked back at the hideous blight once called the Winter Residence. Short an apostle, and someone to take John, he was now backed into a corner. But he'd still have to go through with this. And Cassandra knew that they had him. For, to succeed, he'd have to give himself up to save the rest.
So, what is going to happen to poor Karen and little Jack? Did the detective really make it in time? And I guess I can finally say that we had some actual child endangerment. poor Jack. And how will Jonah handle his predicament? For once again, it seems Cassandra, Eglantris, and the darkness manifesting itself in Montgomery is one step ahead of all our heroes. Tune in next Tentacle Tuesday as we turn the page to Chapter 17, Trapped.